All right. It has been 282 days since our last podcast episode, and a nice break at that. Now back with your host here on today's show, maybe with a different title. I don't know what we're going to name the podcast yet, but by the time you're listening to this, we would have picked a name, honestly. Excited to be back. We're going to be changing the format around here a little bit. It's probably not going to be the next generation anymore. That did for 2 years, had over 100 guests, chatted with people about how they started companies, how they hired people, how they grew companies, how they shut down companies, and everything in between. And on today's episode, I think we are going to be switching things up to honestly just like a business therapy session, or like whatever you want to call it, like a business brainstorm session, 30 minutes, 40 minutes, 60 minutes. We're going to test out a lot of different formats. Gio and I usually end up just texting each other business ideas, maybe 5 to 10 times a week. And so the new format of this show is going to be us pretty much just finding different opportunities to make money, or like finding other people who have like good ideas where they can go and make money, and talking about how we would make it even better, just brainstorming ideas, things like that. Just kind of honestly riffing back and forth. Do you have anything to add on that?
Yeah. I mean, these are essentially like the conversations that we already enjoy having, that we have all the time. So we're going to record them. If other people want to listen to them.
Yeah, we were supposed to record in my apartment today and realized I have one chair. So Gio would have been standing for this episode.
But I'm standing right now because I have a chair. Now,
all right, nothing changed. Honestly, like, I also think the other thing too is if we can do more in-person stuff, if anyone's listening to this and lives in New York City and has a lot of good ideas or wants to shoot the shit, like, we'll just go and start doing way more in-person interviews. I did one over in Spain this past summer and it was just 10 times better. So honestly, would love to do that.
Yeah, I think it's a lot more fun too. And then it's less like just kind of Zoom fatigue, which we're doing anyways all day. So
yeah,
100%. Again, feedback though, you guys like the episode, you don't like the episode, fun ideas, kind of just looking for general, commentary. So if you like it, let us know. If you have other ideas, also let us know and we'll all ears.
Cool. All right. This is episode one, or episode 113, depending on which episode count you're counting. But we want to start each episode with like a little like hack, especially if like all of these episodes are going to be ideation and brainstorm episodes. Like, what are things that we have found that are just making our lives better, or ways to make money, or like ways to get more ideas on an everyday basis? The first hack, coming from yours truly, is if you want to find some of like the craziest ways people make money. The thing I've been realizing a lot is like, you can go on LinkedIn and Twitter and talk to people who have like way more public and vocal about their businesses. But the thing I've realized is people who make a lot of money just don't talk about it. But the one thing they do is they hire people. And so if you want to go and find really interesting and clever ways to make money, start interviewing a lot of people. And if you want to get into like kind of even the more like performance marketing driven hacks around it all, is start hiring virtual assistants and overseas employees, because usually those guys are the ones who are like outsourcing labor, want to go and create big systems at scale. So the overall hack here is hire virtual assistants and read through their past resumes of places that they used to work. One person that I recently hired was a customer support rep over at a company that sold $1 million Zimbabwe dollar bills for like 60 or 70 bucks in the US. And all they were doing was just bring over currency from Zimbabwe and shipping it to somebody for like a gag gift or a birthday present or something like that. And like, you just never would think that this is the currency exchange through a form of like gifting would be an actual business. But the more that you read through some of these things, you realize that these virtual assistants, these overseas hires have worked at some pretty crazy companies.
I'm intrigued on what kind of customer support issues people had. Like, hey, I tried to go to the local restaurant. They didn't take my money. I want a refund.
Yeah. Like, I probably just lost $1 million bills in the mail, if we're being honest.
That'd be a fun comment to call the shipping company with. Cool. All right.
Hey, I have $1 million in the mail. Have you guys found it?
Someone stole it. Cool. Let's dive into, we're going to kind of break these up into different segments on interesting frameworks / kind of models that might all coexist. First one, some sort of discussion on like outsourced headaches / capital / management, which is probably going to make more sense in the next 30 seconds. I found a cool company called Easy Ice on Nick Gray's newsletter. He's also on Twitter. But essentially, the process is, rather than spending $2,000 to $3,000 upfront to buy an ice machine for your restaurant, you pay them $150 every month, and they give you the machine, and it's just a monthly recurring business. And it's super interesting. They make a ton of money, and they had a really difficult time scaling up in the beginning. So they took on a lot of debt, which obviously makes sense because it is a costly machine. But essentially, they buy thousands of these $3,000 to $4,000 ice machines. They go to their local restaurant and they say, "Hey, rather than paying for maintenance and everything else, you pay us every month." Whole other conversation here on how they actually did the financing, but one of the companies that ended up buying them, I think, made about
Are they selling them the machine, or are they literally saying, here's a $2,000 machine for free?
here's a machine for free, but you're going to pay us
To
$150 to $170
service
every
it.
month, right? Which
How often
for them, from
are
like
they breaking?
a, I think a lot. I think a lot. Maybe we need to have some restaurant person on here, but it's a pretty common business with dishwashers for restaurants. Most restaurants apparently outsource their dishwasher cleaning, and so I think this is in that vein. But I don't know. I thought it was a pretty interesting model. That the tough part is it's a really difficult business to scale because you'll never be cash flow positive. So the company that actually ended up owning them was the one that gave them all of their debt and financed most of the acquisitions.
I mean, it seems like a good business, but if you have like $1 million in the bank where you can just go around and start placing all of these, but the payback is way faster
I
than
think it's a good business if you have $30 million in the bank. They
Sorry.
I think I think they raised $20 to $30 million in debt from a company. It's called like Saratoga Investment Corp, which all they do is like mid-market lending. They sold the company in I believe 2020 for, I think they made like $30, $40 million selling it to a small PE firm.
That's a crazy business. I wonder, I feel like, is that another model that, so I think part of what these podcast episodes too are, right? It's like, it's one thing to say, hey, I thought of this entirely new business idea. I think the more interesting part for Gio and I is looking around and saying, wow, there are a ton of companies out there and they're already making so much money. How can I either just do the same thing better? How can I do the same thing in a slightly different industry? And I think like the way to think about this one in particular is there's already high maintenance costs, there's a high upfront expense. What are other things that have high upfront expenses and costly maintenance ones? Like, it's a horrible example, but I'm looking at my window in New York right now and I'm just thinking to myself, wanna know what breaks all the time? And people probably hate to maintain elevators, but like nobody is going to front the cost of, you know, a 200,000, I mean, in New York, it's 1,000 times more than that, but like a $200,000 million, $5 million elevator. And then just say, great, here's your free elevator, pay me $10,000 a month, right? What happens from there?
I wonder if you could even do it with like computers though, right? To some extent, Apple came out with their iPhone program where I think it'd be like $80 a month and it kind of finances the iPhone out for you. But like if you had a small business, you have 10 employees, rather than buying 10 new MacBook Pros or whatever, the computers for everyone, if you just pay $150 a month, covers insurance, covers everything. Anytime they break, they send the laptop in. So I think really interesting model, probably difficult to start if you don't have a huge balance sheet. But most likely applicable in kind of a lot of other areas. The also interesting part I like is that just the business around ice, I never realized was so big. There's ice
Well,
vending machines.
that's why I thought you were going with this in the first place. Like we so for anyone listening, Gio and I, if you haven't listened to some of the stuff we did before, are in the storage business, and we just hired some guy to go and like basically go by for 5 hours a week to one of our properties and turn over units and all of that. And the reason he applied for the job in the first place is because he already has another job where he goes out and services people's ice machines, not like in a restaurant. Like literally, if it's, I think it might be a bigger thing in Texas and it's getting more popular elsewhere, but like. In a normal strip mall, they would go and just put up an ice machine where you can go and have a membership, or maybe you pay $10 and you can go and fill up like an 8 gallon bucket or 5 gallon bucket filled with ice. I don't know the exact quantities and pricing, whatever, but like he basically just goes out there on a weekly basis, makes sure that nothing's broken, pulls all the numbers and cash from the actual machine itself, and then brings it back. But it's right across the street from our facility, which is why he wanted our job, because he's like, listen, I'm already in the area, I might as well be able to go and get double the wage. That seems like a really interesting model. The tougher part for that, in my opinion, is like that is the same as like a vending machine business. Like it's about how many times can you convince a strip mall owner to let you go and place their ice machines there? And you know, maybe you can go and market it as, oh, you'll get more traffic for your tenants, and then your tenants will pay higher rates or something like that. But that seems more difficult than this one, which is let me give you a free ice machine.
But I do think there's a pretty high moat around like the building and installing the actual ice machine itself. And we looked at a property a couple of weeks ago where I think they're getting $5,000 to $6,000 a year just by leasing out the space to the vending machine or to the ice vending machine. I guess it's probably almost identical to a vending machine business, but higher upfront costs. But either way, a lot of money made in frozen and unfrozen water, I think, to some extent.
I think we were originally gonna name this segment like route money or like something along those lines. Because I think the thing that nobody wants in these types of businesses is nobody wants one ice machine. Nobody wants, you know, one restaurant with their ice. I think there's this whole concept going around now called return on hassle, which is you can find a way to say, hey, here's $2,000 and I'm going to go and get paid back $1,000 on that every year. And like the actual percentage amount, the money on paper looks like it's a lot. It's a 50% return every single year. But if you're getting calls and you have to go to a restaurant every single week, or you have to go to a strip mall every single week to go and pick up the change or the ice or whatever, like that's just a headache. And that's just not worth the actual dollar amount that you're getting. So the one thing to note here is I think it's, as you kind of alluded to in the beginning, a very capital intensive business where it only makes sense if you can go have 50, 100, 200 of these and really scale up. But then you'll also see people who will say, hey, I'm going to go out here for the next 5 years and I'm going to go and I'm going to put five down a year. And it's not going to be a good business for the first 2 or 3 years, but it's a low cost. It's low capital if I'm only going to put two or three down. And then eventually I'll have a pretty scalable thing and it's just going to be headaches for the first couple of years. I think it's like, it's kind of like a mini real estate thing if you don't have the money for real estate.
I just can't imagine actually trying to clean ice machines every week though, but there's someone out there willing to do it.
Before moving on to the actual bus route business that I kind of found here, the two things that I think are worth noting. So you originally found this ice machine business from Nick Gray. Nick is spelled Nick. And then Gray is G-R-E-Y.
A-Y.
Okay. Never mind. G-R-A-Y. Then we both spelled it wrong in this then. Worth noting though. He's got probably one of my favorite newsletters. So if anyone isn't subscribed to that, I would definitely sign up for it. And he reminded me, like when I was thinking about what are my other favorite newsletters, one that's also worth mentioning just before moving on here is Nathan Berry. So Nathan Berry owns ConvertKit and it's a paid newsletter. It's a one-time fee of $149. And one of the coolest parts about it is that he shares like monthly updates on his personal finances, his like business and investment philosophies and all of that stuff. And I think a lot of people will go and do stuff like this when they don't have a lot of money. This dude is like a multi-millionaire with ConvertKit and all the other ventures and real estate that he owns and all of that stuff. So I think it's absolutely worth the price if anyone's looking to go and find new newsletters. And also, just as a side note, if we're talking about business ideas, if you are in the early stages of your career and want ways to go and maybe bootstrap or get extra cash, charging to share behind the scenes numbers and exact bank statements, credit card statements, all of that is a really good model. A lot of people don't like airing that kind of stuff out, but if that doesn't bother you, people would pay so much money for that, especially if you go and really share all the results to behind the scenes viewers.
Now we're going to see a whole plethora of companies that make more money sharing how they make money than money. But
it's gonna get meta really quick. All right, cool. Speaking on the outsource headaches, outsource routes type of segment here to kind of bring us home, I found one business for sale. So another way that we typically go and come up with ideas is figuring out what's already making money and they want to go and sell it. And then, you know, analyzing the businesses from there. I didn't get the prospectus on this, but the one thing that I didn't know prior to this podcast is that school bus transportation companies are usually privatized. I don't know if it's like that for all public schools, but specifically this one in New Jersey that I found does $1.3 million a year. It has over $500,000 in cash flow. And you know, who knows where that comes to with like actual just seller discretionary earnings, but like roughly a 40% margin, which is pretty nice to see. And I think it's really cool because they run these private routes specifically for special needs kids in a specific school district. And all of the cash is coming from the actual school district itself. So the school is hiring these school bus companies out in order to go and run the routes to go and pick up the kids. I think it's a really cool business because a couple of reasons. One, recession resistant. Economy is doing bad. Kids still need to go to school. That is like the last thing that's going to get cut. Secondly, they have big school contracts. So you're not dealing with the individual family member and like hundreds of those. You're dealing with a school district that is going to be, you know, a big contract lasting for several years. And so depending on where this company is at in their contract would probably also determine the actual value of the business. If they only have like 2 years left on their contract, could be a big risk. And then the last piece is that it's fractionalized. And so like once, similar to like the ice vending routes and all of that, like once you have your routes, I think it's pretty hard to go and get kicked out of that unless you do a really bad job. And so then the way to go and scale it afterwards probably is not establishing new routes, but instead going and acquiring other companies and getting that scale too. What do you think about
it? I'd be so curious if anyone else actually knows more about these businesses. I think that'd be a really fun conversation to have. because I just have so many questions on it. Do they rebid out the contract every year though, right? To your point, like what, how
I know, if you
risky
do it
is
on an
that?
annual basis.
Is it just like a whoever's the cheapest person to, you know, offer the bus routes? I'd be really curious on the insurance part. Like, I don't know, after doing real estate now for a little bit, you don't realize how much of the world is just about what you're
Insurance.
paying for insurance to either
Yep.
not get sued or making sure people don't get hurt or whatever. And I imagine if you're carrying kids, it's going to be up there. But I think it would be, yeah, interesting. I'm trying to think. I think when I was growing up, we had two different companies that went to my high school. It was a private school though. And I like, that's probably got to be different versus public school contracts, private school contracts. Did you take the bus to high school or middle school?
Yeah, until I was able to drive. Well, I was gonna say for high school.
Yeah. I think it's an interesting one. And yeah, I think to your point, like it, could you just buy out a ton of different routes? I know other businesses that are similar are you can buy like different UPS and FedEx routes. The downside that I believe are with those that oftentimes you have one customer. And so they can really kind of dictate the terms well. Whereas I'm assuming if you have school bus routes, you have, I don't know, five, six, seven different schools, maybe. It's
And you have to
an
pay the
interesting
UPS
model.
drivers $170,000 a year.
Do we don't think the school bus drivers are making that much money?
I don't know. I'm just thinking back to my school bus drivers, and probably not. The one other thing that I would say on this topic is there are a lot of different businesses. Like we're in the self-storage space, and that's changed a lot in the last couple of years because you can manage them remotely. Like Gio and I are in New York right now and own a couple of properties down in Texas, right? Like you can manage them remotely with call centers and part-time hires and all of that based on the technology that exists now. Car washes, same thing. Like a lot of people are buying car washes and implementing subscription services there. We have a friend, Keith, who runs a company called Busright, and a lot of it's like real-time tracking for like kids and parents in the area on like where the bus is and like if the kid got on the bus, and then it also optimizes the routes. And so trying to understand exactly where the bulk of this cost is coming from with these bus routes is really important, because if you can go in, buy a bunch of these bus routes and then turn to the schools and say, hey, previously you were paying us $200,000 a year because we were a yellow school bus and we can go and get people from A to B. Now you should pay us $250,000 a year because parents will be able to see where their kids are in real time. And you know, you'll have better reporting of like when kids are absent earlier or whatever. Like, I don't know what the exact value pitch is there, but I think that could be beneficial. And then on top of that too, if you can cut down on costs by saying, previously, we had to have six school buses because we'd have to cover a lot of ground. But now that we know specifically 5 to 10% of the kids are never going to be on the bus on a daily basis, we can optimize the routes. And now we only need five buses. Like you can start cutting costs and I think growing revenue by having better tech and all of this. So I don't know if Busright specifically does that, but I would say if you could find a way to take a business that is already doing A and implement tech to go and increase top line and reduce bottom line, or and grow bottom line, I think that would be very beneficial.
I think you'll quickly find out if Connor's running the bus company, if the back of the bus is full of vending machine repairmen, ice
Yeah.
repair people, and they're all just
Yeah.
doing the same route of, all right, you get to the school, you drop the kids off, you fill the vending machines, and then you fix the ice machine on the same one.
Perfect.
Even
All
saving
right.
on expenses there.
All right. All right. That is outsource headaches and route companies. Segment number two of today's show is paperwork companies. You want to do yours or mine first?
We can do, I think yours first might give a better glimpse. I like this one a lot. This is probably one of my favorite categories of companies in general.
Yep. So the first one that we've got here is this company that I found a couple of weeks ago. And I actually sent it out to a newsletter that I run. And I had a friend and somebody who subscribes to the newsletter text me and go, hey, FYI, that's my company. Like, I don't know if you knew that I actually ran that kind of behind the scenes. So another example of like people don't talk about the companies that are working usually. They usually talk about the ones that they want more hype on and they want more marketing power for. When companies just print cash, they're usually a little bit more in the shadows because they're afraid that people might come out and want to go and do the same thing.
I think
But
anytime you see a company that talks about how much money they're making, or anyone that ever talks about how much money they're making, there's a 99% chance that they sell a course on how to do it.
yeah, I know. There's a Reed 22 immutable laws of marketing. It's called the law of hype, and it talks about how like most companies only go and try to do all the hype and spokesperson stuff when they are low in revenue. Once they're making a lot of money, they shut up. But this company, basically paperwork companies, the whole idea here is anytime that you have to go and do any kind of government work, government related job, government related license or anything like that, it takes a lot of manpower and headaches and just like everyone's been to like a .gov website, clicked on a link, and now all of a sudden a 36-page PDF is up there, and they're like, oh wow, you have to go and mail this back. It's just a headache. You don't want to figure it out. You're going to do it once. And so how can you go make it simple? This company is called Goodbye Startup. And basically what it is it will go and take any LLC you own, or C Corp or S Corp or any type of business entity. And if the business failed, if you're done running the business and you're shutting the doors, whatever it is, they have a DIY done, do it for do it yourself option. Or they also have a white glove approach where they will go and actually shut down that entity for you. They'll fill out all the paperwork. They will go and coordinate with both the state. They basically just make your life really easy, and you pay them a convenience fee that ranges from $500 to $2,000, depending on what type of service you're looking for. And I think when I sent this out, I was like, this is a really cool business. Get a text from my friend who's like, hey, I run the business. I was like, no way. How does it do? He goes, this business is good. But if you want the exact text he sent me, he goes, unemployment one is way better. Crazy affiliate deals on the back end. I go, oh, that makes so much sense. Because I think you can make money on the business itself, but the more interesting approach then is, okay, I just went and shut down my business. What other kind of services can I go and have, right? Is it, if I shut down my business, I'm probably looking for a job. Can you go and send the person to a headhunter or to a recruiter? Can you go and start marketing to them all of different companies that are hiring, and then have a job board on the back end of it where it's, hey, brand new to work types of people that are entrepreneurial coming into your candidate system? Like, there's a lot of ways to make money on that. And it kind of poses the question to me, what other businesses exist like this? What other businesses have so much red tape, so much paperwork, so much like bureaucracy, that you can just go and give a very easy done for you service and then have great affiliate offers on the back end? The two that come to mind for me right off the bat, health insurance, whether it's leaving your job and applying for the COBRA status to go and continue your existing health insurance, or just applying for your actual state itself, giving a very easy, like startup pastel color, simple modern design, website and front end, and letting people do it that way. The other one is insurance claims. Thoughts here?
Yeah, I mean, I think I love this framework because it's such an easy one to like, all right, when could this work? Anytime you fill out a PDF document, mm-hmm. almost for anything. And like anytime mm-hmm. you have to send someone a PDF document, it would be so much easier if you could just, you know, just it's easy to kind of scale that out when you're the one that has a business that's doing that, you know, night in and night out. I think another fun one that I like a lot is Inkfile. I think we've talked about them quite a bit. Same thing, they'll follow your LLC for free. They make money on the back end with their affiliate and kind of upsell programs.
Their upsell ones are crazy. It's like, get a credit card, get a bank account.
Bank account, credit card. The bank account one, I think, is even through, it's like $500 in Bank of America, whatever. I think if you sign up through them. So I think, you know, I think that's a fun one. Anytime you come across a PDF that you got to fill out for some sort of government thing, I think the next question quickly is, hey, is this a service I can outsource for people? The one that I was looking at that's really interesting that kind of does both of these, it's both a saves you time and hassle and makes you a lot of money, is where during COVID, kind of after there's a whole tax credit that came about where essentially companies can save a ton of money on taxes depending on what they did with their employees. One company figured out that, hey, if we just convince a lot of people to start kind of making these calls and build up an affiliate network, the pitch is you call a company and you say, hey, I'll save you $20,000 next year in taxes. All you have to do is, you know, give us some information over the phone and we can instantly sign you up for that.
What was the name of the company?
Bottom Line Concepts. So they currently, this year and in the past year or two, they did $6 billion in ERC tax credit claims.
When were they started?
They started in 2009
okay,
in a small New York City apartment as like he just helped people cut down on like utility bills mm-hmm. for a percentage of the fee. So kind of similar vein of like you only pay them when you make money or when they save you money.
Great business model.
They saw the kind of the concept with the tax credits, 50,000 people in their affiliate network, $6 billion in claims, and they make 25% of that. So that's $1 billion there. And then to your point, they had a lot of success with like general maintenance call guys that are going into a business. They would just talk to the owner of the business while they're going in and like cleaning the floor or something and say, hey, did you know about these tax credits? All they had to do is set them up for a phone call. And then it gets kind of sketchy. They like the affiliate then gets 10%. If you have people below you, you get 5% of them.
And it's a pyramid scheme right now
for overselling a little bit. But the concept I think is still there and is actually really interesting. So the other cool part there was on the, they partnered with Kevin O'Leary for one of the presidential debates. They came out with a two-ad spot with him as a spokesperson. They had $140 million in submitted claims. And again, assuming they make 25%, which is what they typically charge, that's $35 million for two commercials.
That's insane. I think, the takeaways here are, like, any company can do this, right? These are forms to fill out on a government website. And what's crazy is, like, if you're just a small business owner, like, probably do it yourself, like, the full 100%. But if you're a big business owner and you don't know anything about it, and the pitch is as simple as, let me do this for you, and then you will go and get money that you did not know existed, it's a no-brainer pitch. It's super obvious.
Also, don't pay me anything. No money up front. No, doesn't cost anything.
Right. A lot of companies that do this too are like, I think there's one called, like, I think I'm gonna have the name wrong. I think it's like Negotiation Shark or something like that, where it's like kind of like what you're saying with the utility bills. They'll go out and like negotiate with all of your vendors and try to get a cut of that. So I think it's an interesting concept.
We use one actually every year for our
for taxes.
Property taxes.
Yeah.
They negotiate them on our behalf. If they get it lower, we owe them a percentage of the decrease in property taxes.
The other one too is, aren't there like permit expediters? Isn't that a big business?
Sounds like bribes.
Is that what it is?
Well, I don't know what to elaborate on permit expediters.
No. Okay. I don't want to elaborate on it because I don't think I know the business enough. Somebody was just talking about it the other day when I was talking about like the whole enjoying government-based processes that somebody just puts better UI on. And they're like, you're talking about permit expediters. I was like now, as you bring up bribes now, it might just be that. But I honestly didn't get it enough. I just saw the headline. But
I wouldn't be surprised if it was just like you pay someone to make sure they're following up every day and that the government permit is like following their deadline. They need to respond to you in a week. Maybe they're just sending that email, you know, the week later because stuff falls through the cracks all the time.
Yeah. I also think the other thing here too is like, if you can build a business around something that is a one-time process for somebody else, but you do it daily, it's at that point, right? You have the access to knowing who's who in the State Department or the government or entity that you need to go and talk to. And so you start building up like systems of scale where if I wanted to turn around and get some kind of permit or like whatever exactly you're applying for here, I would have to learn everything. I'd have to try to navigate a system and figure out where to go on a website, who to go and talk to, whatever. Whereas if you do this every single day, it becomes so much faster for you. So it gets easier over time too, right? It seems like such a headache and it seems like your job is doing the headache, but it quickly becomes less of a headache when you just do it a million times.
Do something enough and it becomes hopefully easy. Yeah. As I said, like I looked into how to do the property tax protesting and it gets so complicated so quick and it's such an easy one to outsource. I wonder on this vein as well, my roommate needs to figure out how he changes his state car registration or wherever it's registered for taxes. And I bet you anything around the DMV, if there's any sort of process that you could outsource there, I think people would pay a lot of money to just make that significantly easier.
Rushing passport renewals, visas, all of that stuff.
Definitely a very cool market.
Cool. We actually didn't name segment three. Segment three, let's call it identity companies. I don't know how you record all ideas when you get them. I think the cliche answer is just Apple Notes app, which is probably fair, but like I now have so many of those scattered around. Something that I've been doing is I have a dedicated email address and I'll just email myself the concept in the subject line and like nothing in the body. So it's just like, I'll look at it later. I'm like, what did I mean by shopping carts? But 90% of the time it usually works.
My issue is I take screenshots of everything and then I'll try to go through on a monthly basis. I have 13,000 screenshots though. So
yeah, it's not helpful. I'll do like the Twitter bookmark thing and then never read it ever again. Point being, I found two concepts that I was like, oh, these seem interesting. Let me do a little bit more of a deep dive later. And so the general framework here is find a high spending category. That's the easy cliche part. It's entertainment, it's food, it's clothes, it's, you know, hospitality, whatever. And then combine it with a lifestyle or a cultural preference. And so this to me is like, when you are in like a business school or undergrad, and like if you are ever in like a pitch competition or trying to like come up with business ideas, you know, people try to get super creative and clever. I think honestly, just taking a already high spending category and applying a lens, a filter, whatever, of, oh, I'm only going to go, like, people spend a ton of money on baby furniture. Fantastic. Let's do baby furniture for Christians. Or people spend a ton of money on laptop cases. Fantastic. I'm going to go and do laptop cases for anime lovers, and like just start niching down on really high spending categories for a specific fan base. And so the two examples that I came up with here that I just kind of found in the wild, and I was like, do these companies make a lot of money? The first one, the answer I think is no, actually, as I looked it up and did some more research here, it's called Umami Cart. And it's essentially food delivery, Whole Foods for Asian food, right? And so it's right now I live in Chelsea, and so, you know, K-Town's like right next door, and you can find like cool, like local Asian and Korean grocery markets all over the place. They supposedly raised $6 million 2 years ago. Supposedly they do $6 million a year in sales. The website is awesome. If you were ever looking for like a very well done website for like a high SKU, high inventory based business, I think that this would be a good example. But it's just food delivery and like grocery delivery for more like Korean, Asian types of food like that. The other one here is Crunchyroll, which is just Netflix for anime and manga, whatever the word is there. But they, on the other hand, did $120 million last year. So I think both of these businesses could, the Crunchyroll one clearly already has a dominant stance in the market with anime and manga. The Umami Cart, I think, could be in a really good position to like take all of these local Asian grocery stores in a place like New York, where it's, you know, there's a huge population here, and take that and just put it online. And I think you're seeing other things quickly pop up here as well, with like Indian food or like other types of cuisines too.
You're kind of just making a bunch of Venn diagrams and picking like profitable overlapping 100% segments there. I think
okay, that should be the name of this business: Venn diagram businesses.
Venn diagrams, but we draw them for free. I think Discord might be a kind of somewhat of an example. I feel like it's almost Slack or some sort of just communication for gamers is at least how it started. I know. I think you hate Discord. We haven't talked about that.
I don't hate Discord. I just think I'm just too stupid or just too old for Discord.
But either way, right? It's an overlap of like, okay, communication for X group of people, and then just gets very specific in that. And I think it's filtered away from that now, but kind of same vein. But to your point, it's can you find a group that is high paying and that has a lot of money, rather than like, you know, maybe mm-hmm. figure out a way to target wealthy, you know, wealthy New Yorkers, or I know pregnancy and like the pregnancy market is high spending typically, right? What's another overlapping, you know, segment that you could have there? I don't know what it is, but first one that came to mind.
All right, on the Venn diagrams, damn, I wish we thought of this name earlier. Venn diagram businesses. If you are bored later on, go and search. Is it Kamala Harris VP?
Kamala Harris.
Look up her on YouTube and then type in Venn diagrams afterwards. You ever watch that video?
No.
It's just a 5-minute montage of her going, so I really like Venn diagrams. You know Venn diagrams, the things with the two circles overlapping? Really like that. And she says it in like 25 different speeches. Hilarious.
One that I did remember, it wasn't pregnancy ones, it was weddings. I gotta find the name of the company. There's one that's always in the New York subways. Planning.
All right, I was gonna say the Knot is a subject that I have for a later episode because I want to dive deep into that. No, you're thinking it begins with a Z. It's like Zuba.
Zola. Yeah. Okay. I think we'll pivot this conversation on the whole next one. I think that's another good overlapping kind of.
Yeah. Take a business where the entire economy could, the entire society convinces you have to spend $50,000 on this one day event, and then just be like, yeah, we want a part of that $50,000. I think that's a great example. The last thing here on the Venn diagram one is like, I gave two examples specifically for like kind of Asian culture. The one that I love personally is Black Rifle Coffee. You're basically just taking like conservative gun enthusiasts, hunters, whoever, like people who are like in that genre, and then combining it with something that they spend, like veterans, I think is also in that genre, and combining it with something that they spend money on daily, coffee. You have Black Rifle Coffee, which is a $1 billion company.
Do you think you could do the opposite? You think you could make a very like liberal focused kind of coffee company?
Woke roast. Worth
New York's latest coffee chain.
Worth clarifying, not my idea. I found that on Twitter somewhere. But yeah, woke roast. I think the better one would be coffee for religion. So like some kind of like morning devotion blend or something like that, and it's like best read with the literature of God or something like that.
Comes with a daily Bible quote.
Perfect. Oh yeah. All right. That actually, damn, I like that idea. All right. Anyway, I'm gonna leave off this episode. If you, guys, worth noting, we're only gonna keep on making. We took a long hiatus on these episodes because podcasting is weird where you just don't get any feedback, and we were just like, we're booking too many guests and this is taking up too much time. Now we'll probably do a lot more just Gio and I episodes, and I think we'll get better at it over time. Happy to go and always bring people on, especially if they're in New York who want to come on and just kind of shoot the shit. But like, truthfully, these are just too fun. It was turning into a job before, so we kind of nixed it for a little bit. But if you do like these, text us, email us, tweet us, whatever. Like, just give us any form of feedback, because I think the more we get, the more fun these are to make, and we'll just start cranking these out and trying to do way more research on all of them too. Do you have anything to add before I add my fun fact?
Well, I feel like I need to come with fun facts next time. No, this is exciting. We haven't done this in a while, so curious to see where we spin off from here. But no, hit us with your fun fact.
All right, I was watching.
I don't know if it's fun, but.
Yeah, I don't think it's that fun, but I think it'll be fun for like the 5% of people who can relate to it. I was watching a TV show last night and I saw Leslie's pool in the background, and I paused the show and I turned to my girlfriend and I was like, are you kidding me? Like, this must be shot right around where I live. Like, they have a Leslie's pool. And she's like, wait, I was thinking the same thing. Like, I thought Leslie's was like a local mom and pop pool store next to us. It turns out they are like a nationwide brand. I don't know if they just went public or if they're about to go public. They're owned by L. Catterton, which is like, I got the biggest consumer-based private equity company in the world.
What is L. Catterton?
Yeah. So I had a call with somebody who's like, who she runs some finance thing at L. Catterton this past week. And they own everything. They own everything from like Bar Taco in Boston. They own Birkenstocks, which is like on the verge of going public at like $9.2 billion. They own Leslie's, they own West Marine, they own a bunch of different companies. So if you have a Leslie's, or you thought that Leslie's was your hometown local pool cleaning company, just know that it is a nationwide brand. And if you ever want to be like a big industrial type of company, but still have that hometown feel, name it after some kind of like local person.
Call it Wendy's after your daughter and sell hamburgers.
Good idea.